the America's Jobs Team podcast. For economic developers, by economic developers. Join the Consultant Connect team every Tuesday and Thursday for discussions surrounding the latest in our industry.
Learn from fellow economic development heroes, get leadership advice, keep on top of industry trends and shifts, and so much more. You are a part of America's Jobs Team.
And we're so glad that you're tuning in.
Hey, you podcast listener, welcome. I'm Faye Davis, and I sat down with Northwest Arkansas Council Chief Operating Officer Mike Harvey for a really interesting conversation surrounding the community preparedness work his organization does, as well as what it is about his region that retains Walmart, Tyson, and J.B. Hunt's headquarters. Mike has some really great insights into the reason why Northwest Arkansas is so stable, and you should really listen till the very end to glean some of his advice for economic developers looking to land a big headquarters project of their own. Mike is recognized as one of North America's top 50 economic developers this year, and it's easy to understand why, even though you'll hear him referring to himself as not really an economic developer anymore. We truly believe he is the bee's knees, so here we go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I am Faye Davis. I'm super excited to be here today with Michael Harvey. Michael, how are you today?
Good. Good morning, everybody.
All right. We're just going to jump right in. I've seen you many times, Mike, and I'm really excited to learn more about you. So can you take us back kind of to when you were in high school, graduating? What was your plan for college? And how did you end up where you are today?
Yeah, got high school. Yeah, like I didn't have a plan at that point. I'm just like, go to college. It's kind of interesting. I've been using my own experience in kind of directing our workforce efforts on career awareness and education component for kids in school because I didn't feel like I had any guidance. This was a long time ago, mind you. I've been doing this for quite a while. God, I don't even know how long I've been doing it. 26, 27 years. And so I graduated high school in 1986. And I knew I kind of wanted to do a business related major. And that's kind of where I went. And, you know, I kind of muddled through school because I just wasn't ever terribly interested in it. But I did kind of find my groove in my junior and senior years in marketing and enjoyed that. And grades improved dramatically because I did. And then after school, that was right around that 1990-91 recession. And it was really tough for people getting out to find work back then. And so I bounced around a little bit and decided to go back to graduate school. And I was thinking MBA, but I started doing a little bit of research and found the Masters of Economic Development program at University of Southern Mississippi, my alma mater, which really was the first of its kind in the country. I think it started like back in 1980. Kudos to Dr. Ron Swagger for getting that started because he kind of started a movement. And there's Southern Miss grads all over the country now, my peers and others. You know, looking at the curriculum, it dovetailed a little bit more with marketing specifically, and I decided to go into that program instead of pursuing an MBA. And, you know, the rest is history, kind of in terms of my career. I have done this work my whole career, which I think is, in this day and age, a pretty rare thing to say. Talk to a lot of people in economic development and they came from other backgrounds, you know, banking or real estate or some other background, and they kind of somehow fell into economic development. Well, I trained to do this and I went to work at the local level and then the regional level and so on again for the next 26 years, 27 years. So
I think that's awesome though. And it's just like you said, that everybody has their own unique story. And it is not very often that we have someone that actually pursued a master's in economic development. So that's super cool. And I really love that you said you took some of those marketing classes. You have a little bit of a marketing background. I tend to find that a lot of people do have, not a ton, but a lot of people do have that affinity with marketing because you kind of have to in economic development. Because what are we doing? We're marketing our communities. We're marketing our regions.
Yeah.
So kind of speaking about that marketing and getting people alongside you, without a community rallying behind the economic development cause, the work can really feel like an uphill battle. So can you share some of your thoughts on the importance of a prepared community for success in this work?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I talk to people about economic development, that's basically all I talk about is, you know, being a prepared community. We kind of learned back in the day in the traditional sense, you know, prepare, then promote. A lot of communities get the cart ahead of the horse and just want to sell without, you know, doing the hard work of product development, if you will, to make themselves more attractive to expansion or our relocation, our startup companies. And so I'm very fortunate that I've fallen into a role in an organization that's all we do. We do actually very little promotion in traditional economic development. Our focus is what are the key challenges in our region that affect our business climate? And we've been that way for 30 plus years as an organization, privately funded. So there's no pressure from the public side by electeds to put shovels in their hands or scissors or whatever, and really focus on the hard problems that face communities, infrastructure, whether it be physical or social infrastructure issues, and make yourself attractive and make your business climate attractive. And the benefits will come naturally. You won't have to try. So, I mean, when I'm out talking about economic development as a philosophy or I can't stress the importance enough, focusing on what makes your community attractive to business rather than just going out there and telling them you're attractive for business. So.
Yeah. And so I think that's a unique way of doing the work in our industry. So what have you seen in terms of return on investment is not the right term to use there, but what have you seen in terms of bang for your buck, really focusing on your communities in the Northwest Arkansas region?
You know, just if you take the measuring tape out, I mean, we're one of the highest performing regions in the country year after year.
We're going to get back to that one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would point to, obviously, our inherent advantages of having three Fortune 500 companies located here. But, you know, we have three Fortune 500 companies located here for a reason. You know, they started here and they grew here because it was a good environment to do so. And the founders of those three companies started this organization because they knew what it took for a region to support world-class businesses. And so, you know, not many can point to their founders being of the caliber of Sam Walton and J.B. Hunt and Don Tyson. You can say there's no such thing as altruism, but it was very regionally focused that they wanted to really kind of key in on those issues that were affecting the region in 1990 and, of course, still today. That obviously would help their business, but would also help the region as a whole grow and prosper and thrive. They knew they couldn't do it if the tide wasn't rising for everyone. So
I love that. I'm going to actually want to drill even deeper into that because over the summer, your region was named as the number four best place to live in the U.S. By U.S. News and World Report. And I'm going to read something real quick because I made notes. But according to the ranking organization, compared to metropolitan areas that had unemployment levels skyrocket, areas with greater employment stability tended to fare well. So Northwest Arkansas at that for that ranking jumped four spots from the previous year. So what do you think the secret was for your region during this turbulent time? You just touched on, you know, that cohesion within your community, that buy-in from those Fortune 500 companies. But, you know, how do you see that stability of industry playing out in your region, especially over the last year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, again, very fortunate that the companies that we have here that I don't know if your general audience knows, but Walmart's headquartered here, right? The home office of Walmart is here. Tyson Foods is headquartered here and J.B. Hunt is headquartered here. There's about a dozen other companies with revenues over $100 million that are headquartered here too. So it's a very attractive place for corporate headquarters and has become so because of the concentration of talent, and then the following of all the consumer packaged goods brands that have located here. And so if you kind of look at those three anchors and the University of Arkansas is here with 29,000 students. Those are pretty recession resistant and even to a point thrive in recessions, if you think about it. And so, again, we had the good fortune of who was here during that pandemic to really buffer any kind of really big negative effects. Now, this is not to say we weren't affected. Our leisure and hospitality industry was hammered. I mean, absolutely hammered. I think the numbers went from like 26,000 employed in that sector in February of 2020 to 16,000 2 months later. I mean, so it had a huge drop. It's recouped all those jobs in the subsequent year or year and a half. But still, you know, we had people affected. Our unemployment rate went to about 7.8%, but now it's back down to like 3.2%. So really good and very fortunate in that respect. I think another aspect of it is we took advantage of remote work and the fact that we have been investing for probably the last 10 or 15 years very, very heavily in community, in lifestyle amenities here. So, and it's been locked. It's been a concerted effort by the philanthropic community, which is huge here. The families give back so much, the families of those founders. The public sector and also the private sector corporations to invest in this community from everything from schools to parks to trails. You know, obviously, we've got an amazing trail system. And so parks, shopping, you name it, quality of life amenities that makes it a really attractive place to not only work, but to live and recreate. So we got aggressive in marketing to talent as well over the past few years, and we attracted, best I can tell, about 12,000 new residents. Not quite that many, but we grew by over 12,000. Typically, that about 2/3 of that comes from somewhere else. So it was significant.
That's really awesome.
Right in the throes of a pandemic. So that was really something. That's how we've been able to really kind of weather the storm here.
I think that's really interesting. You've mentioned a couple of times now the huge name in business that are headquartered there. So especially Walmart, J.B. Hunt, and Tyson Foods. And you've mentioned the talent and the work that Northwest Arkansas Council does to make sure that the communities are thriving and behind the work. What advice do you have for economic developers that are maybe looking to grow their headquarter presence in their community? Because you all are doing something really, really right in the region, because companies are not above picking up and moving if it's not the right fit anymore. And these companies have been there since their founding. So do you have any words of advice to share with those folks who might be looking to grow that presence?
I mean, I think obviously everybody's unique and we're super unique in that respect. I do think that the pandemic has changed the equation. You know, for us, it could be good or bad, right? If people can work anywhere, live anywhere and do their jobs, then what does that mean for a Walmart? You know, if I'm an employer, I'm kind of watering at the mouth trying to figure out how to take advantage of that because my talent pool just exploded, you know, because and the tech companies, I think, have this figured out, or some of them are getting it figured out at least. And so I think, number one, you got to make your community as attractive as possible for a place to live. And if you want to target that kind of talent, you need to kind of customize what your region's strengths are for the type of people that you're trying to attract. In other words, not everybody's going to be able to attract the kind of people that we attract, and then we're not going to be able to attract the kind of people that Dallas-Fort Worth is going to attract, or, you know, Helena, West Helena, Arkansas, right? So we're in between rural and urban in this community. We're going to attract a certain type of person. We know what the profile of that type of person is. So know the profile of the type of person that's going to be attracted to your community, and then start targeting them with the aspects of your community that you want them to see from a remote worker perspective. I think that's one thing on attraction. And I guess the other thing too is just like, how can you prepare your local workforce to be able to do that kind of work as well? We're very focused on fungible jobs, I guess, would be, you know, an area that we're focused on in our community, is as well as, you know, those trades in other areas. So building up that pipeline of talent that makes yourself more attractive. And then I think then focusing on your community itself and those things that do make it attractive to people, because I firmly believe that the jobs will follow the talent.
100%.
Yeah. You know, going forward, it used to kind of be the other way around.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate. We always say, looking back 25 years of this organization's existence, that the focus was, you know, more of a traditional economic development role where the people followed the jobs. And starting about 14 or so, we got really hyper-focused on workforce, because we really saw a change coming that, like, communities that have been magnets for talent just because they're great communities. Austin, Texas, I think, is one that people like to point to. The jobs followed, like the companies followed. Right. And of course, Texas is doing what Texas does to make itself a great place to do business, to attract companies and everything. But I think, let's be honest, the people came to Austin before the companies did.
Yeah.
Some other communities like Nashville is another one. Chattanooga is doing some really good stuff. My old stomping grounds in Knoxville. I mean, they really focused on their communities to make them really attractive places to live. And then again, that drives investment, you know?
Yeah. And that's such an interesting shift, because over the course, especially of, I would say, the last 2 years, that I've noticed really that's catching on, that that's starting to gather steam, where people are like, hold the phone, the script is being flipped, and we need to be focusing on attracting the people. And then that kind of like, if you build it, they will come, but reversing it, you know, stick the people in the stands first and then the team will show up.
Yeah, it has really turned economic development on its ear, you know, from what I learned 25 years ago to what I'm doing now. And I'll be honest with everybody in the audience, I don't do much economic development anymore. I'm an administrator. I'm actually hiring people to do this kind of work now. But strategically, I'm still in the trenches on workforce and economic development because it's a passion of mine. And that's also kind of part of my role. But to me, it's all about the powers in the workers' hands. I mean, I really do think the talent is in the top spot here. Talent's at the top of that pyramid. And then everything else really kind of follows that. Obviously, you got to have other pieces in place to attract, which quite frankly, we've had our challenges here, right? So if we get an inquiry or a RFP from a large industrial user right now, we struggle. We don't have a lot of this real estate available to them. And that's a good problem to have, but it's a problem that we've had for years and years and years here that the absorption rates are happening so fast. I struggle to submit on an RFP for like a large office user or industrial user if they're wanting existing space, which most of them are, let's be honest. So you got to have the other pieces in place. Obviously, you got to have a good tax and incentive structure. You got to have a real estate in place. You got to have all those other things that a business looks for. But those probably should be a given at this point, you know, and then
exactly.
And then I think the real focus that differentiates communities is going to be the talent pool that's located there. And I mean, companies are smarter than they used to be. Used to, the blunt instrument was unemployment. Well, you didn't got enough people. Well, you know, I always tell people, generally, companies don't come in here and hire unemployed people. They hire out of the existing talent pool. And here's what that looks like. And what makes us so unique here is that, you know, on a lot of positions, like we have one of the largest concentrations of white collar workers in the country. And in retail and CPG and supply chain and stuff, it's literally top, maybe even number one. You know, it's top five. It's crazy how many people here do that kind of work. So,
yeah, I think that's great advice. And especially, you know, that whole conversation around talent, because you can have every single other piece in place, but if you don't have the people, that becomes a really, really hard conversation with those future projects coming in.
Yeah, we have to prove that they're here, that we can supply a pipeline of them, and that we can attract them. Those are the three things that literally when I have a prospect in town, my whole presentation focuses around those three aspects, knowing what they do, knowing what kind of talent they're going to need. Do I have the existing labor pool here with the profile that matches their talent needs? Can I work with universities and the community college system to make sure they have a pipeline of workers locally? And is the region attractive enough to attract, you know, their top talent? And weird things affect that. We were able to land a real highly sought after, I think it was one of the top candidates for president of our culinary institute, I think, a couple years back. Had a child with special needs, healthcare needs, and would not have come here if we didn't actually build the Northwest Arkansas Children's Hospital here. Didn't have that here. And it was a real focus of the region for a couple of years to raise the $83 million match or whatever to get that built. And those kind of things make a difference. And you never would. I never in 1993, when I was starting the master's program, would have think, well, that's important. That's important. That's important. So it's a lot of different things that go into those considerations for people, you know, top talent and companies when they're evaluating regions and so forth.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you so much for sharing a really large peek behind the curtain of what makes your region tick, you know. Don't give all the secrets, but
I love to share. I mean, the thing I love about economic development, again, I don't do much of it anymore. Unfortunately, I don't get the opportunity. But and the reason I guess that I've stayed in the game, and a lot of people stay in the game for life on this versus going to other careers. I tell people, if you want a career that constantly challenges you between the ears, like mentally, right, in terms of multidisciplinary focus, learning about different aspects of business in your community, I don't know that there's a rival out there in a career. There is no more multidisciplinary discipline, if you will, profession out there that I can think of. I mean, I know so much about so much. And my wife always goes, how the hell do you know that when something, and I'll rattle off this or that. I'm like, well, you know, we needed to do this or that for a prospect, or I'm doing this research project. You just need to know about so many different things. And it's if you're a curious person or a learner or just have a voracious appetite for information, man, you couldn't find a better career than economic development.
100%.
Yeah.
I was reading an article not that long ago that was talking about generalists are the way of the future.
Yeah.
And I think economic developers, yes, we have our own specialist knowledge on certain things, but we are the ultimate generalists.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah. So. We are definitely jacks of all trades and James.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes, we are. Well, Mike, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you again for sharing so much of your wisdom and congratulations on, I know you say you don't do a lot of economic development, but you are a key cog in the wheel there in Northwest Arkansas. So congratulations on your award as one of North America's top 50 economic developers.
Well, I'm honored, obviously honored, and appreciate, you know, the kudos, but I've got a great team around me and, you know, all the credit to them and this community too. I mean, what a humble, dynamic, you know, unique community I live in. They make me look good. You know, the whole region makes me look good. So yeah, I appreciate it. And on behalf of Northwest Arkansas, we all appreciate it.
Well, congratulations, and we'll see you soon, hopefully.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks for sticking with us till the very end. This podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment, Lead Generation for Economic Development, and Gazelle AI. Spend more time closing, less time chasing. Did you like what you heard today? Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Jobs Team podcast is audio engineered by Andrea Fuller and produced by Faye Davis.